Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Google and Apple are huge, world-shaping, and different at the core. Now they're also tussling big time all over the internet frontier. Our phones, apps, tablets, TV, music, and a whole lot more. Their competition is consequential. It's personal. It's already framing lives. This hour on Point, Apple versus Google and the way we'll see the world. You can join the conversation. Who frames the future? Who's the boss? Apple? Google? Somebody else? Facebook? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We will hear in this hour from big net gurus Kevin Kelly and Tim O'Reilly, and from iPad app developer David Levitt. But first, from New York City, we're with Jessica Vassalero, tech reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Jessica, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Take us down this checklist. There are so many products on which they're now going head-to-head, TVs, maybe music soon. Let's just start with phones, iPhone versus Android. How is that unfolding, Jessica?
The battle between the two really did begin with mobile. And, years ago when Apple first introduced the iPhone, Google CEO Eric Schmidt was actually on the board of Apple and started distancing himself from those conversations around that product because Google, of course, wanted to be big in the smartphone space as well. And where we are now is that Google's approach, which is to develop software that powers lots of different handsets, not just one like the iPhone, has done well for Google in terms of market share of actual devices sold. By many measures, it's bigger than iPhone. And so that's a real front in the battle. Of course, it really boils down to what sort of advertising dollars are going to be able to be captured in mobile, which is still an open question. But, we've seen there Google really catch up and in some cases pull ahead with Apple and mobile, which was a tall order, just given, obviously, the sex appeal and the popularity of the iPhone.
No kidding. There's iPhone and Android and a whole lot of products. Let's go to iPad. It's been a huge noise this year. Google now, they've got a whole sort of a set of tablets coming out in their world.
Well, it's going to be a very similar playbook to what we saw with them in smartphones. Google's been working on two different types of software that they hope will power tablet devices. One is basically Android, what was in their mobile phones. And the other is something called Chrome OS, which is a version of sort of their Chrome web browser that they're calling an online operating system. And what this basically means is they want lots of hardware makers to build very lightweight computers. They're called netbooks, but some may also have a sort of tablet-like interface to do and just carry around, uses e-readers, uses video readers, used to stream video and music. So, here we're still waiting to see, I think, exactly how Google enters the market. We're expecting to see some devices announced by the end of the year, probably the holiday season. But this one will probably play out similarly to mobile.
Take us to the TV front. And what's Apple doing and where's Google looking, Jessica?
Well, this is funny. Every place is a similar story. Apple has had a very small little box called Apple TV that's basically allowed people to get iTunes on their TVs. So you can download your shows and just watch them on a big screen. But what Google's come up with, and they've recently demoed, and we're expecting to hear more about probably next month, is another box, but instead of just sort of having streaming you or doing some downloads, it's really trying to turn your television set into a computer that's connected to the internet. So Google's vision is you turn on your TV when it's connected to this Google TV software, and you can browse the web. You can go to Facebook. You can go to Twitter. Mm-hmm. You could even go, they would hope, to Hulu and watch online video from there. You can also watch, if you have cable service, you could also watch your cable programming. So it's sort of the two worlds coming together. Now, this is, it's very early days. Of course, it isn't even in the market yet, and definitely remains to be seen how much consumers sort of want to do this all that internet stuff in front of their TVs. But, again, illustrates how both these software companies see the television is an important place for new software development and, you know, eventually a place for advertising and, you know, other business models, maybe paying for shows one by one, downloading them off the internet instead of paying $150 a month.
And I skipped right over iTunes, I realize. What's going on that front? Google Music, iTunes competition.
Well, so Google for a long time has been trying to figure out sort of how to enter the music space. And for many years, you know, when iTunes was growing and growing based on the model of downloading individual songs, Google said, you know, we're really a search company. We want people to find songs if they're sort of interested in them and come to our little search box, but we don't want to get in that business of selling stuff. And of course, it's very hard to do because you have to strike deals with all the record labels, and you, if you're small, you can't get deals that are on the same terms as Apple, so they were always sort of behind there. But what they've come around to realizing is that music is so popular and that consumers, you know, if they're coming to look for music, they also want to be able to listen to it or buy it right away. So recently they sort of moved to make, to improve the experience of searching for music so that when you searched, you would actually see a link pop up in your Google search results where you could go and download that song or stream it if it was available online. But, you know, they're still working, and I think there's a lot of expectations they're going to launch a new product that is, you know, some sort of more iTunes-like store for music, but still within their world of search. I mean, that's one of the big differences between the two companies, right? I mean, Google makes the vast majority of its revenue every time someone types something into a search box, and they constantly want you to be in that search experience.
Sure.
That's where they can show ads. So, you know, Apple, on the other hand, is, you know, they make money by selling devices, and in some case, software and individual bits of media like songs. So they have sort of different worldviews on that point.
Well, yeah, and a lot of these sound like Google getting into Apple's business. On the other hand, Apple, you know, is getting into ad sales. iAd in a huge way, too. I'm looking here at a Business Week, Bloomberg Business Week, saying that Apple will end this year with 21% of the market. Google's just got 27. Apple's going for ad revenue, too.
Definitely. And that, you know, those stats are you know, it's a bit misleading because it's a very small market at this point. So it's really anyone's game still on
mobile advertising
and
right?
Particularly mobile advertising inside software apps like games. But it was, you know, when Apple announced iAd, it was a shot right at Google. And Steve Jobs, you know, wasn't shy about it. He said he thought that current advertising on mobile phones was just a bad experience and that Apple could do a lot better. I think what we've heard and is still, you know, advertisers are intrigued by Apple's approach, which is basically to sell ads that are very rich media, lots of video, very immersive, very, very appealing to look at. But they're also very expensive, and it's also unclear, you know, how well they actually perform. So I think advertisers are excited about Apple being in the market. They always like there being another competitor, and obviously Apple's a great brand. But it's really too early to say how much Apple's going to be able to run away with that.
Google versus Apple, it seems like game on all over the place. Jessica Vassalero with the Wall Street Journal in New York. Thank you very much for joining us, Jessica.
Thanks for having me.
Now, two big voices on the net and its future. From Pacifica, California, Kevin Kelly is here, founding executive editor of Wired Magazine. His new book out next month is What Technology Wants. Kevin Kelly, thanks very much for joining us.
It's a delight to be here.
And from New York City, Tim O'Reilly, big internet thinker, founder and CEO of O'Reilly Media, the tech publisher, organizer of big conferences like the annual Web 2.0 Summit. Tim O'Reilly, welcome to On Point.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Kevin, first to you. Can everybody win here? Is this a death match? What's going on, Apple-Google?
Oh, absolutely. This is not a winner-take-all situation, although that often happens in kind of network economies. But in this case, I think these two different general approaches can both win. We can have a Google-like company that's going to really rely on having as many people play as possible win. And I think you can have a company like Apple that really wants to custom make and tailor a very curated experience, they can also win. And I see both of them going forward.
Tim O'Reilly, we're already pretty deep into this experience. Lots of people walking around, obviously, with, you know, iPods and iPhones and all the rest at the same time. People still searching Google all over the place. But do these continents drift further apart? Can they live on their own? It looks like they're fighting a lot. They're coming into contest, Tim.
You know, it's funny because there's a stage in any great company's life where they either remember what they do at the core or they forget it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think both of these companies are on the point of forgetting what they do. And I see it in Google's case. The genius of Google was that they distributed attention to other people on the net.
Okay, right.
You know, that's
right.
What search does. They, you know, it really enabled the internet economy to take off. And Google was always creating value for other companies, other people.
Mm-hmm.
And increasingly, they've started to play into an Apple-like strategy in which they're trying to – I mean, at least on the application front, in terms of what they're doing with Android, mm-hmm. once again, they're creating value for other people. They make zero on their handsets. They just basically created a platform layer that would basically keep the internet open. The reason they had to do Android, and it was such a brilliant move, was because they saw that their access to the consumer could be choked off by whoever owned the front end. So they had to have an open front end.
In the mobile world in particular.
In the mobile world, yes. And so I think they've done a great job there. But when you look at some of their applications, they're increasingly playing Apple's game, which is, which is we're going to get all of the people coming to us.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Google versus Apple and the future of the internet and how we use it. Who frames the world for us? Tim O'Reilly is with us from New York City, technology internet guru, head of O'Reilly Media, and from Pacifica, California, Kevin Kelly, founding executive editor of Wired Magazine. Look for his book, new book, out next month, What Technology Wants. Kevin Kelly, Tim says, you know, these two are in danger of forgetting what they do best. Who's forgetting what here, Kevin, if that's true?
I think we generally see the competition will form or converge people to the kind of same point, to the same middle point. Because if you're really competing with each other, then you begin to have to move towards them. And so I think Apple is trying to move towards where Google is. Google is trying to move where Apple is, but I think there will still be a fundamental difference. As long as Steve Jobs is running the company, it's going to be something, the products will be something that are very, very designed, highly evolved, very specifically oriented to an experience. And Google wants everything. They're much more inclined to be inclusive as far more than Google. And so I think that will continue as well. I don't think they're going to become the same thing and forget who they are, although that's always a temptation. I think
Kevin,
the real issue is there someone else out there? Is there a third mm-hmm. entity? Because I think that's the real thing. Once you start to be in a competition, you forget that there are other players.
Tim, if they're fundamentally different at the core in their impulses, and almost everybody says they are, why are they in such competition right now? Is it the gravity
my point.
Of competition?
Yeah. I think I actually my call, and I'm not privy to the inner discussions between these two companies, mm-hmm. but my call is that Apple got greedy. You know, I mean that they thought, wow, we can own it all, and you know, Google, you know, in response to that said, wow, if Apple owns it all, we're screwed. We have to respond. So I actually think that the competition began with Apple, Google needing to preserve this open world. And that open world could have included Apple. But mm-hmm. Apple basically has been trying to build a closed world that only Apple controls. And in that world, there's not much room for Google. And so, you know, I think these two companies in an ideal world would be amazing allies because, of course, the kind of content that Apple provides access to is the kind of content that Google would love to be pointing to. But the problem is that now Google playing on Apple's terms and trying to reproduce so many of the things that they're doing and Apple trying to reproduce the things that Google is doing is a huge waste of resources for both companies, I think. And I think, as Kevin says, that will open the door for other people.
Well, Kevin, there's the gravity of competition. I guess we get that. But, I mean, Is Steve Jobs' ambition so big that he thinks he can suck the whole Google world, the whole net, into Apple world? Or is this just kind of the, Rodeo Drive of the net, you know, with really fancy, really polished products, and he assumes Google will go on somehow in its own way, in its own realm?
Yeah, I mean, I take Jobs at his word that he's just trying to make something that people want. And in many respects, people can be frustrated by the difficulties of a very open world where you're not really sure if something will work or things actually don't work because nobody's really responsible for them. So I think the appeal of having something that's, you know, guaranteed to do what you want to do and does it very nicely will never go away. And the question is, the problem is that kind of takes advantage of or relies on the fact that there's this larger ecology out there that sort of supports that very customized and closed experience. And so I think if Google was running the entire world, it would be horrible because there wouldn't be anything outside. There wouldn't be the ecology of other stuff really kind of supporting that vision.
Kevin, Google isn't trying to run the whole world, or at least if they are, yeah, they're doing that in response to Apple trying to run the whole world. Google's original core, and still in so many ways what they do is they point to other people and they amplify the work of others. And now we're entering this phase in the net, which is kind of sad, where all these companies that were part of this cooperative ecosystem where you built value for yourself by building value for other people is now being replaced by a series of attempts to say, I'm going to get all the value here. You know, I'm going to put up a wall and I'm going to be in control. And that's I think, not good for the net.
Right. I agree. So in the Google world, I think that is if you could have only one of the two, I'd rather have the Google world than the Apple world, if you could have only one. But I think that the forces for keeping things open are basically that the young Turk coming up will cause disrupting. I think ultimately, if you have just a closed world, people aren't going to like that and will migrate away from it. So I think the forces towards keeping things open are tremendously powerful, and people recognize that ultimately they don't want their entire lives scripted by somebody else.
Tim, let me ask you,
I've
seen the lines everybody has at the Apple stores. You know, they're like around the block, even in the middle of a recession. So is that just going to be like a specialty, high-end shop, or could that really threaten this large, sprawling Google ecology that you and a lot of other people, were very enthused about as the great promise of the Internet?
Well, I think there's no question in my mind that Apple is not going to own it all. And it's really just this sort of competition is really good on the whole, but there's a kind of a destructive phase that it can go into. Mm-hmm. And that's actually the theme of our Web2 Summit this year is this points of control. All these companies vying to get the high ground where they can, squeeze the other people.
Right.
And it's a stage actually, I think, in an industry that tends to be at first seems like, wow, there's all this amazing competition. It's great. But as companies become stronger and start to squeeze the life out of a particular area, it does become stagnant. We saw that with the personal computer. You know, it went from being an incredibly vibrant economy to one that was fairly static once Microsoft really got in a very strong position, once Intel got in a really strong position. And so I do worry that there is a missed opportunity here for companies to keep the game going by looking for, I say, create more value than you capture. If you use that as your mantra, not just don't be evil, as Google says, if you say create more value than you capture and say, are we growing the entire ecosystem or are we starting to consume more of it than we create?
Fences.
Then through fences, then, that's a great way to figure out if you're on the right track.
We've got a lot of response here. Here's some from Facebook. This is a third party we should talk about. But here's Kevin on Facebook saying, he says, Apple offers a curated experience, polished, which is great for people who don't want to deal with tinkering. But here's Eduardo on Facebook. He says, I think Google will eventually overtake Apple on the mobile and mobile app markets because it's an open platform as opposed to Apple's platform. What do you say, Kevin Kelly?
It's possible. It's possible that, you know, I mean, in certain sense, you say who won between Microsoft and Apple, and in some senses, Microsoft won, although Apple never go away, and everybody who had an Apple, like myself, thought that, you know, Apple had won. And I think that this is not, I mean, I think Tim is right to be concerned about the fact that Google seemed to be imitating some of Apple's approaches and trying to close things down, or another, and I think that is a true worry. But in the end, I think that it's very possible that we could imagine a scenario where Google triumphs, their phone triumphs, their TV triumphs. It's not impossible to believe that.
I want to bring our listeners in here, Fairfield, Iowa. Paul, you're on the air with Kevin Kelly and Tim O'Reilly.
Hello.
What do you think, Paul?
Well, you know, these companies have got to be who they are. You got Apple being Apple; it's a retail company. You got Google being Google; they're search based. But the fact is, to me, they're dancing around the, you know, the primordial aspect of the web is empowerment. And so the degree to which they, you know, can change the couch potato to the couch participant is the degree to which they're, you know, they're hooking into the primordial function of the web, which is empowerment.
So who's got a leg up, or do you see a winner and a loser here, Paul?
I think we're the winners, because you have competition. They both have versions of the truth. The question is it Twitter? Is it Facebook? You know, there's all these different versions of the truth. What's the, you know, the core element of the web? But I think it's really, you know, Apple empowers you, Google empowers you, but the person who taps into that is the one that succeeds, and the winner is the user.
Yeah, Paul, I appreciate your call. Tim, when did they see this coming? I mean, Eric Schmidt was famously on Apple's board and famously kind of a, you know, cut loose. Steve Jobs saying, unfortunately, Google was entering more of Apple's core business. When did these two companies see that they weren't just, you know, jolly colleagues on a new frontier? They were competitors.
Well, I think, first of all, let's put this in context. They are competitors in certain key areas. Mm-hmm. And it really started with the mobile phone. And the reason it started with the mobile phone is that Google knows that their core business depends on access to the consumer. On the PC, it's an open platform. Nobody controls it. We had the, you know, Microsoft antitrust lawsuit because Microsoft really did try to control access, you know, through the browser and through their browser share so that they could have directed preferred access. And so if Apple won, you know, the world in which Google could thrive would be controlled by Apple. So they had to respond. And I think that the so it really started back with that strategic imperative, you know, where Google needs the world of mobile to look a lot like the world of the web on the PC, mm-hmm. or they're potentially toast. Now, I will put in context here. There's a bigger story that I've really been trying to tell for the last 10 years through my Web 2 events and mm-hmm. so on. And that is that we really are building an internet operating system.
Who's we, Kemosabe?
We, everybody who's working in the technology industry. You know, so for example, Facebook is building the social subsystem. Mm-hmm. You know, Google is building the search subsystem. You know, Apple had done a great job of building the media subsystem, you right. know, access to media. Amazon also. Mm-hmm. There's lower layers of sort of just actual compute power and so on. But think about it for a minute. When you pick up your mobile phone, this is where you really start to understand that the internet is the operating system. Mm-hmm. And you use an application like I did to get to the studio. I use Google Maps mm-hmm. on my phone, mm-hmm. and it's giving me directions. You know, those directions are coming down from the sky, you know, or from Google's data centers,
mm-hmm.
really.
Right.
And it's tracking me in real time. It knows where I am and is able to say, turn left at the next corner. This is a service that is coming, you know, out of the cloud. And there's really two versions of the operating system for the internet that I see. And one is an operating system that, like on the PC with Microsoft Windows, is controlled by a single party.
Right.
And the other is one that works like the internet has always worked, where there's lots of cooperating players. And I love that cooperating players model, where you see that, you know, on my phone, I open my address book and the faces are coming from Facebook. And I, you know, I want directions and I get them from Google, and I want music and I get it from Apple. That's a wonderful multiplayer world with lots of people creating and capturing value. And I think we should want that world as consumers.
Well, let me ask you then, if I may, let me put it to Kevin. Kevin, if this is in effect an operating system for the web emerging here, is this tussle at the heart of it, you know, between Google and Apple, just for one, is that a glitch, a problem, or a feature?
The tussle is a feature. We want people to tussle over things because out of competition, as the other caller say, the consumers benefit. And so this is a feature of the process. This says a process is still working if there is still competition over who's going to control the operating system of the Internet, which I agree with Tim. This is what we are creating. It's one large machine. It's got, you know, 2 billion people and billions of machines together. It's the largest machine we've ever made, and that's what we're building. Who should control that is a real issue, and we should see competition here.
Let's go to our listener, Scott, in Arlington, Massachusetts. Scott, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, good.
Yeah, it just kind of, I'm an IT guy from some 25 years, and it just kind of makes me crazy hearing some of this.
Let's hear it. What?
Larger concepts that are being missed. First of all, Google is a software company that specializes in software in the cloud, software as a service. They have almost no downloadable applications, whereas Apple is a software and hardware company that integrates the experience for the user. I mean, where their expertise is in the end result for the user. Google has tons of brilliant brains, and they keep, you know, they get great ideas and start going off into different directions, and they got off into the direction of working on phones. So when somebody finally said, you know, they're really only competing in key areas, they're not competing overall, I think that's an important point.
But when they start churning out software to power all kinds of hardware that will compete with Apple, they're head-to-head, in effect, aren't they, Scott?
They don't make hardware.
They don't have to. They can make the software that goes into everybody's hardware, but not Apple's.
No, that is a significant difference, because Apple is able to engineer the hardware to work well with the software. There is an issue with, there's different versions of Android. There isn't just one single Android. There's different versions of Android for each device, and the software is modified by each manufacturer for their hardware device. So there isn't a single user experience.
Absolutely. I mean, that's part of that too is part of the competition, Tim. I mean, Apple's putting out its own hardware with its software inside. Google cooperating with lots and lots of people as a business proposition, which looks more competitive to you, Tim.
Well, I just want to answer Scott's point. I think that you're absolutely right that the competition in some ways is between different visions of the future, and that Apple's has the PC-era legacy of downloadable software that's loaded onto a device, whereas Google really is the cloud experience. You know, so you think about you know, Gmail versus Apple Mail. Apple, you actually download the messages. It's the old model using POP or IMAP to get the mail down onto the device. With Gmail, it's just you're connected. You're in the cloud. Google's placing a bet on the idea that everybody will always be connected. But I want to disagree with you on the idea that Google doesn't, you know, create experiences. They revolutionize search by creating a better search experience than anyone else by radically simplifying it. They revolutionize online mapping by creating a better mapping experience, one that was more open, more effective. And, you know, when you think about the key applications on your phone, if you have a smartphone and you don't think the mapping is one of them, you know, you're missing something. So Google makes great experiences just like Apple does. They're different. You know, Apple's experiences tend to be highly crafted. But I think one of the problems that I see with Apple, and I watched this with Mac OS X, Mac OS X has become more and more like Windows over time. It's become more crufty, more buggy. And I think that's one of the risks in Apple's approach. Google tends to build simpler, disconnected products.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Google versus Apple and the future of the Internet, how we use it, who frames the world. Kevin Kelly is with us, founding executive editor of Wired Magazine. His big new book out next month is What Technology Wants. Tim O'Reilly is with us, founder and CEO of O'Reilly Media. His big Web 2.0 summit is coming up, November 15 to 17 in San Francisco. Joining us right now from Sebastopol, California, is David Levitt, founder and lead engineer of Levity Novelty. He's got a really cool new app out for the iPad. It's called Alive Albums. Lets you run through your Facebook photos very easily, kind of ambient entertainment from drawing Facebook photos from all over the place on the iPad if you've got one. David Levitt, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
It's great to have you. You're right in the middle of this thing, and you're developing for the iPad, for Apple. What drew you to that world? Why there and not somewhere, you know, just out on the web where Google would pick it up?
Well, it's a really interesting time. It's a little bit like before the iPod came out, when everybody was struggling with music and nobody had a solution until Apple came up with it. In a way, the iPad has the potential to become the first platform for photos, that in the sense that the iPod was the first big platform for personal music, because it's big enough and it's connected to the cloud. And that's actually what Alive Albums does. It's a consumer experience that lets you connect to all your Facebook photos and discover photos that you never realized were there and enjoy them with very little effort. And in a way, I think it was Kevin saying that you have to create more value than you capture.
Right.
In the consumer world, you have to produce more fun than work. And the problem on Facebook, especially when you're trying to look at photos, is that it feels like work. You have to click and click if you want to see full-size photos, or you have to look at tiny
right.
photos. And the browser experience is very slow. And Alive Albums really solves that whole problem.
So, David, let me ask you, could you produce this kind of fun without Apple? Could you do it if it was just Facebook and Google out there? Are you now, like, you know, committed to the Apple polished-up world?
Well, it's great to have a polished-up world to develop in, but, of course, I will be developing for Google's and the Android platforms as well. And there are these important technologies like HTML5 that let you develop applications that may not be native to the device that you're on, but that run in its browser. So you really have a choice whether you're going to be in the Apple curated store or out on the web in a format that every browser in the world can use.
So does the corporate sort of a tussle going on here, does it matter to you when you're working out there, you know, developing a cool app for the iPad? Does the rest of the fight matter to you?
Oh, it matters. Well, we don't view it as a fight in quite the same way, but it matters dearly to every developer, and I think everyone understands that they're a key part of the food chain, and they try to court them. People remember that just 4 years ago, Facebook was not the leading social network, and when they decided to make an open developer platform and suddenly had thousands of applications, tens of thousands working for them and their platform, that's when they became number one. So Apple and Google really, they've actually had stumbles relative to the trust of developers, both of them, but that really helps determine what the future of the platforms are.
David Levitt has Alive Albums going on for iPad. It's a really cool app. Kevin Kelly, you know, on the one hand, there's an impulse to sort of sing kumbaya here, but there is a real corporate fight. I mean, it's been very tough between Eric Schmidt and Steve Jobs. Schmidt's off the board. They've got products going head-to-head all over the place. It doesn't seem like a big world of harmony here. It seems like they see it as, you know, chips on the table. And yes, one soft and hard, but it does seem like a direct conflict.
Well, there is a lot of money involved, and whenever there's a lot of money involved, there's going to be friction and conflict. And so I think what people realize is that this cloud thing that we're all making right now is very big. There's a lot of our life that's going to go on it, a lot of our attention. So there are huge stakes, and I think whenever the stakes get big, people can kind of get a little crazy. As Tim says, they can begin to get greedy when they realize how much money is flowing through here. And so there are a lot of stakes around, and we're going to see, I think, even further conflict and even presumption of conflict in the future.
Let's go to John in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. John, what do you see, my friend?
I was just listening to the conversation about the HTML5 applications,
yeah.
And that's where I was kind of curious. These giants that get to their point, are they in the process of creating platforms that are seamless to where they still have their opportunity to have choice, but it's not so complicated for the consumer? It seems like it gets to that point. And, you know, for instance, Facebook using open source to get to their success, do they eliminate that success and try to keep open source from creating competition? just a question.
Tim O'Reilly, what about it? One toolkit here going forward, or are even the tools going to be floating apart?
I think there's going to be, for at least for some long time to come, different approaches to building applications. I think the promise of HTML5, of course, is that you can build applications that will run on either platform, assuming Apple really supports it and allows it. You know, Apple has tried to follow the Microsoft playbook and use the developer tools to lock in developers to their platform so that developers have to work harder to build the application that will work on somebody else's platform. So you have to do it twice or three times or four times. And with HTML5, of course, you could write the application once and it would run anywhere. That's been a holy grail for the computer industry mm-hmm. for a long time. I do think that the thing that Apple has done that's really good for developers is that they introduced another business model. You know, for the longest time through the web era, advertising was the only business model.
Mm-hmm.
And when Apple made it possible for people to start selling applications, that creates huge opportunities for developers. I do think that right now we're in the euphoria stage of that, just like we were in the euphoria stage of the web where everybody's thinking they're going to get rich. And, of course, only some people get rich in a gold rush and a lot of people fail. And we're, you know, that's starting to come out. But what's really, really good is that it's not just one business model. And you know, Apple definitely does a better job, I think, of monetizing for sale applications than Google. I think something like 80% of iPhone and iPad applications are paid.
Mm-hmm.
I think something like 45-50% of Android applications are paid. But it turns out that actually in-app advertising is also growing up. There's the possibility of real revenue there. There are niches, and developers are exploring and finding those niches and building businesses. And it's just like the early days of the web when there was this huge sprawl of innovation as people were trying to figure out what would work. And most of it failed, but the things that worked really added value to the world. And I think we're going to see the same thing in this huge competition for mobile applications.
David Levitt, have you felt like, you know, hallelujah, Apple's made a world in which I can develop something really cool, Alive albums here, and make some money on it?
It's really, in many ways, it's a dream come true, because for $100 a year developer fee, you can create apps in this platform. You can make some of them free. You can charge a couple of bucks for them. And do your experiments and let the consumers decide what they're going to pay for.
So, Kevin, are we all going to have an upgraded experience because of the Apple influence, or is that offset by the walls that get put up?
I think in total it's a positive contribution. Mm-hmm. I agree with Tim that this new business model that they've introduced, among many other innovations, is a net gain to us, despite the fact that there's walls. I think the appeal of this open cloud will continue to draw others in. And as I want to reemphasize, there are other people competing. It's not just Apple and Google. There's another one.
Oh, I totally agree
right
with that.
Yeah,
I totally agree with that. You know, it's not just it's really even not even thinking about the companies, but looking at all of the areas where services will need to be provided, you know, things like payment, location, identity are sort of clearly three big areas. But, you know, access to all different types of media, there'll be new innovative services, speech recognition, you know, Google is working on. And obviously there's companies like Nuance that already have a multi-billion-dollar business in that space.
Right.
Automated translation is something else that Google is working on. There's so many different areas where the future is going to throw up new application areas that we're not thinking of today and that could become extremely valuable and powerful. And that's the real beauty of this. But there is this battle right now, as we say in our Web2 Summit program, for points of control. And there are a lot of companies, there's going to be a lot of mergers and acquisition as companies try to, you know, there'll be somebody who has a sort of a creative start at something. You know, Google has got to make some acquisitions in music, for example. You know, Apple continuing to try to beef up their location-based services presence. Payment, I think, is really up for grabs on both fronts. I think a lot of people haven't realized just what a strong position both Apple and Google are in now, with the phone being used to buy applications, to buy music, to buy books, to buy videos. You know, you just have that one-click experience of just, yeah, let me pay.
And commerce in your
hand.
When will
that start to get applied to offline commerce? I keep imagining a day when I point my phone at a barcode and click, I bought it.
Google.
Or I point my phone with Google goggles. You can literally point at a book cover or a bar or a label of a bottle of wine and scan it, and you could just say, "Yeah, send me a case."
In the blink of an eye, Google turning 12 today. Birthday cake up on the website. Let's go to New York, Brant Lake, New York. Carol, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to tell you, I am not a I'm not a techie person.
Okay.
And I start with. What I like about my Android is because what I learned on my desktop, I didn't have to relearn to run my phone. Mm-hmm. So it was I've got Google, and I can do my Amazon and buy some music and put it on my phone, and it's flawless. I don't have to figure out how to do it.
Very smooth transition for you.
Very smooth, and that's what worked for someone like me who's in their 60s and using this stuff, and it's something that I can communicate with my kids with, who of course know all this stuff. But it works well for me because I didn't have to learn something brand new to try to use a mobile device, a smartphone.
Right. No proprietary world that you had to learn into. I appreciate your call, Carol. Let's get another here. Adam in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Adam, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. It's actually interesting what the last caller said, because my experience has been the opposite, where the openness of the Google Android has kind of scared away people like my parents, the older generation. The technology seems complicated and convoluted, where Apple, who kind of dominates control over the applications that are developed for it, seems more simple and streamlined, and to them, everything should just kind of work together. So I think both companies have a success as long as they keep the end consumer in mind and what they're wanting in their products.
David Levitt, you're in that iPad world, and it's once you learn it and you're in it, it's very cool. Do you worry about people with their nose sort of pressed up against the window? I mean, Apple's kind of the pricey end of engaging with the Internet. You know, not everybody's got an iPad, so what?
It's true, but so many people have an iPhone or an iPod Touch, and the fact that it is the same interface really is a piece of leverage that Apple can bank on. Just this month, as Apple TV comes out, there's sort of a stealth thing going on where a technology they call AirPlay these days lets you take anything that was streaming to your phone or your iPad or whatever device you could afford, and if you have an HD TV, you can say it should stream over there. That really changes the game. Suddenly, the YouTube video that you were watching, you can now watch full screen, or you can watch a movie on the best screen in your house. And again, you haven't learned a new interface, and you still have the same. You might be doing it from an iPod Touch that has no service plan and is very relatively reasonably priced.
Kevin, what's going to decide? We've got Apple TV coming. Presumably, there'll be Google TV is coming. You know, what's going to be an Apple TV household, and what's going to determine if it's a Google TV household? What sort of perspective on the world or technology is going to determine who goes where?
I think, in the end, you know, consumer choice, the number of choices that we have will favor one product over another. And in the TV world, people have a long history of watching TV. They kind of know what they want. I think that it's going to come up to who provides the most opportunities and possibilities to the consumer, and I can't.
Well, I don't agree with that, Kevin.
In what way, Tim?
One of the things that we learned from Google's introduction of its own phone, the Nexus One, was that it's the path to the consumer that matters. And I think that the winner in the Google Apple TV battle is going to be the company that makes the best partnerships with people who are already delivering television into the home. Because basically neither of these companies, you know, is going to be really, really good at selling this device, helping people set it up. You know, so it's going to be, you know, okay, well, who's working well with, you know, the various cable providers? Who's working well with you know, Best Buy? And those, I think what I have to say there is that, you know, if Apple wants to be more than a niche player, they will have to be better at partnerships than they are. I think Google learned their lesson with the Nexus One, and I think, you know, I would bet that their strategy is going to be very heavily partner-based, allowing other people to make money with the software they created, and that's going to be the winning strategy.
Kevin Kelly, I wonder where this goes. The New York Times is here quoting a Silicon Valley investor saying it's World War III out there. He's stunned by the level of rancor he's witnessed. He says this is emotional. This is the biggest ego battle in history. It's incendiary. And then they've got David Yoffie, Harvard Business School, saying it's going to get uglier. To beat Apple, Google's going to have to be very aggressive. If they're successful, it will put price pressure on Apple and the iPhone. Can everybody win? Can everybody really win, Kevin?
I think that in the end, the consumer wins. This is a battle about business models right now, and so there's a lot of hand-wringing among the people who have to produce it. But by and far, this is a wonderful time for consumers to be alive, to be reading, watching, listening to music or movies or TVs. They are the ones who win in the end. And so we can kind of, you know, stand afar and watch the fireworks as the titans wrestle, while in the end it's going to be someone else off the screen who's actually going to triumph after they're wiped out.
David Levitt, you've got your Alive albums making people happy right now, I guess. Sounds fun.
Yeah.
They're picking it up. They're using it right now. It's not a future fight. It's just a fun in their hands, I guess.
And ease of use is really going to win. I don't agree that corporate partnerships are the answer. The real issue for Google is all these different devices puts it in the same place that Microsoft was in. How you type the search string while sitting at your front of your big TV is going to have a big factor in whether people actually use your product.
David Levitt, you created Alive Albums. Look for it on iPad. Tim O'Reilly with O'Reilly Media in New York. Thank you for joining us. And Kevin Kelly, look for What Technology Wants. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.